Hi, I'm Misha Ketchell, editor of The Conversation. For democracy to work, people need to be well informed. That's why we work with academic experts to share their research and explain issues in the news. Everything we do is free to republish, but we need your support. Please donate to The Conversation by going to donate.theconversation.com or following the link in the show notes.
Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is The Conversation's Politics Podcast. The small business package was a centrepiece of the budget, and for the government, it's been a success story. It has thrust Small Business Minister Bruce Bilson centre stage as he, Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey have travelled the country, especially to marginal seats, selling measures which include an instant assets write-off for purchases under $20,000. Bruce Bilson joins us today. Bruce Bilson, how many electorates have you visited so far since the budget?
Well, in that week immediately following the budget, Michelle, I think it's about a dozen, and we've done a few since in this sitting week. So it's been a busy program, hearing firsthand from small businessmen and women about their response to the budget and also sharing some information about what else is in the jobs and small business package that hasn't quite hit the headlines.
Now, do you have any data so far about the response to the write-off? Do you have any numbers?
Well, it's too early to get some hard data. What we have and what's been very encouraging is the field evidence, and that's the response from enterprising men and women saying this is just the catalyst they need to take an idea or an ambition and turn it into economic action. And frankly, that was the purpose of it. We've heard from young women running cafes that this is the chance to buy a van and turn some of those My Kitchen Rules recipes that we all aspire to create. She's thinking about creating those in her business and then delivering to people's homes. I've heard from dry cleaners have shared with me their view that this is just the shot in the arm they need to go and buy some new technology that will notify their clients when an article's been ready for collection. So, you know, we've heard quite a variety from businesses thinking now's the time that they may well move on ideas they may have been sitting on for some time, and that's really been the idea behind the package.
Now, the government today described as a stunt Labor trying to bring on an immediate vote in the House to pass this legislation, that is in the lower house only. But Labor was responding to government taunting, wasn't it? So are you surprised?
Well, it was hard to know quite what they were doing. In the lead-up, we've had a range of differing views. The opposition leader spoke about the instant asset write-off being a fire sale at used car lots and at Harvey Norman's, and the shadow spokesperson, Bernie Ripoll, bagged the idea of a small business company tax cut just days before the budget. So they've been a bit all over the place, and what we've been urging Labor to do is to be clear on their position. Accountants, not the government, accountants have been advising their clients that it wasn't quite clear what Labor's position was. We've got the bill before the House today, and rather than give the opportunity for government and opposition MPs to talk about small business, their concerns, what government can do and what the package will support, we saw this stunt to pull on a vote before there'd been any discussion and any opportunity for the Parliament of the nation to hear about the life and lot of small business people. That's why we voted against the gag. It wasn't a vote against the package. That was a stupid lie that Labor put out there. It was about not gagging a discussion that small business deserves in this Parliament, that still sees us get that package of bills over to the Senate for its first day and its early orders of business when the Senate reconvenes.
Are you expecting any delays in the Senate?
Well, no. One of the responses that you may have picked up in question time today was me urging Labor not to back any pointless pondering in a Senate committee that would hold up the passage of the bill. And on a TV network this afternoon, the manager of opposition business, Tony Burke, said that Labor wouldn't support the bills for this instant asset write-off and small business company tax cut going off to committee. So I'm encouraged by that. But as I've said before, it's not about the backswing. It's all about the follow-through, and we'll be holding Labor to that assurance so we can get these measures through without delay.
It does sound as though you've been a bit caught here, though. On the one hand, you do want to facilitate the measures going through. On the other hand, you want to score some points off Labor, even though it has said, whatever the byways and sideways that it's gone up, it has said all through it would support this measure.
Well, but you're right about byways and sideways. That's what the accounting profession had heard from Labor. They were the ones saying to the small business community, hang on, it's not entirely clear what Labor's position is. I acknowledged and recognised that Labor has clarified its position, and the government's welcomed that. I don't think anyone could accuse the government of playing games here. This is Labor celebrating tactical stunts that might be of great interest in this parliamentary building, but not of great interest to small business.
What happens in politics, though?
Well, it does, but that's okay. It doesn't mean that I or the government needs to be distracted. Small business men and women risk a lot. They mortgage their houses. They create more than 4 out of every 10 jobs in the private sector. Why can't small business have a day when its interests are front and centre in the nation's parliament? We had many colleagues that wanted to discuss that. And even in what's known as the matter of public importance, another part of today's business, Labor couldn't help themselves but want to talk about small business and the government's jobs and small business package. So even Labor backbenchers and shadow ministers wanted to have that discussion and debate. That's what we voted against Labor gagging, and now the Parliament is turning its mind to the needs and aspirations of small business people, and that's great, and that's what it should be.
Out in the real world, it seems that small business, from what you say, are listening to the government and buying rather than the accountants and being cautious.
Well, it's a mixture. I mean, the field evidence is encouraging. People are sharing with me their ambitions and how the government's package will support their enterprise. That's what the purpose of the package was about. And that's why we've been trying to provide as much clarity, sure-footed and certain passage of these legislation. And that's why I've urged Labor to desist with its funny business. Might be great, gripping, political, tactical stuff, and the insiders here might give back-slapping congratulations for some cunning plan, but it's not helpful for small businessmen and women. We're focused on delivering this package.
Another part of the small business package is a tax cut down to 28.5% for small business. Now, Bill Shorten said that eventually should go down to 25%. He's not actually saying Labor would do that, but that should be an aspiration for both sides of politics. He's got some flack from the government over this, but isn't it a worthy enough long-term aim?
Well, the government's about lower, simpler, fairer taxes. What we've done in this budget is actually see the small business company tax rate go to a level it hasn't been since 1967, since Sadie the cleaning lady was number one, top of the pops. That's what we're actually doing. Labor's spoken before about reducing the company tax rate for small business, talked a great game, didn't actually do it, put out newsletters saying they'd done it in 2010 and didn't actually do it. So the aspiration
didn't
is...
Didn't the Coalition vote against some
no,
of that tax reduction?
They didn't bring it to
Well,
vote.
It certainly threatened to.
Because the issue was, how are you going to fund it? And this is always Labor's problem. They've got a million great ideas that often thought bubbles, uncosted and unfunded. This was another one. And what journalists tell me, even at lunchtime before Bill Shorten delivered his speech, there was nothing of this mentioned in it. So it was a very late inclusion in Bill Shorten's speech, recognising that what the government had done had earned such positive response and support from the small business community, he thought, gee, we better do something, and dropped it in late, and that
it's
was the issue.
Of course, that Bill Shorten didn't tell the journalists.
Well, I can only go by what I'm told, and that's a journalist saying they'd seen the speech and it wasn't in it. So it was a thought bubble late in the piece. Great to have these ambitions, knowing how to fund them and to implement them. That's what small business people are looking for. That's what sets what we're doing apart from Labor's ambition. It's action, it's funded, we're working thoughtfully and in a sure-footed way to implement them. And when the budget repair task allows us to go further, I can assure you and your listeners, Michelle, I'm not short of ideas about what else we can do.
And you'd like to push the tax rate down when the budget allows.
Well, that's our ambition. Lower, simpler, fairer taxes. But let's think about some of the other measures that are in the budget package. The asset write-off, excellent, excellent. The discount on income tax paid by non-incorporated businesses, this was another mistake that Bill Shorten made. He only talked about the small business company tax rate. Now, only one in three small businesses are structured as companies. Tony's tradies, the self-employed, independent contractors, the sole trader, those businesses operating through partnerships and through trusts, they are completely ignored by Bill Shorten, but the government hasn't ignored them. So that's where that 5% discount on the tax liability for incomes for those businesses up to $1,000 is what we've also added to make sure all small businesses, regardless of how they're structured, are getting reward and incentive and encouragement for their enterprise.
The budget made some changes to encourage business startups, reducing red tape, essentially, things like that. But do you think that people will remain cautious because of the state of the economy about going into new ventures? And I do notice that the growth figure today was quite encouraging news on the general economy, but it's hardly powering along.
Yeah, and look, this isn't the only thing and the first thing we've done. We've been implementing our election policy agenda, getting, if I could use the term, the entrepreneurial ecosystem right, so it's more supportive and more nourishing of enterprise. And what are the results we've seen? The record number of small business companies have been formed in the last 12 months than any other time in our history. We're hearing people from the banking sector saying their small business clients are now re-engaging with an appetite for finance. We're working to fix the employee share schemes that Labor crueled by bringing forward the taxing point that made them very unattractive. But is there a better way of aligning a business's objectives with that of their team than the employee share scheme? I don't think so, but we've had to fix that. That was a $200 million commitment. Getting crowdsource equity funding as a framework right, helping businesses with their formation, and then if they need to change structures to better achieve their ambitions, we've also got a measure in this package that stops a trigger event for a capital gains tax liability. So there's many moving parts here. Even getting fairness and healthy competition, it's what franchising reforms were about. That's why we've got the Food and Grocery Code before the Parliament. That's what the heads of agreement were about for those businesses operating in the motor vehicle supply and service chains. That's what our unfair contract terms were about. That's why we've launched a horticultural code of conduct review. It's all about getting that environment right so efficient businesses, big and small, can thrive and prosper. And if people have an appetite to be their own boss and create opportunities for themselves and others, this is the place to be.
Are you still finding people nervous, however, of leaping in?
No, we're finding people are wisely making an assessment about whether the time's right. We're urging them to be thoughtful, and that's what our Small Business Advisory Service program is about. Business intenders doing their homework. This isn't for everybody. It's not for everybody. You know, lying awake at night wondering about your cash flow for the month, that's not for everybody. Mortgaging your house to create opportunities for others, that's not for everybody. But it is for many. And we're trying to make sure that they're competent and confident about the opportunities. And you know what the great news is? More women than blokes are starting businesses these days. Women are leading this entrepreneurial endeavor, and that's great as well. And we want to celebrate and herald that and encourage others to do likewise.
Now, just looking to what you'll be doing next, I think you just touched on the competition agenda, but do you have initiatives, priorities coming up there? What are the big areas that need to be tackled there?
Well, right now we're trying to make sure the Food and Grocery Code of Conduct gets through the Parliament. It's passed through the House of Representatives without disallowance, and we have to wait for the Senate to come back. And that'll make sure suppliers to our big supermarket retailers and wholesalers are on solid ground, are treated with good faith, have clear terms and conditions, and no unilateral standover requirement to cough up money just because the big retailer says so. That's part of it.
That's looking pretty safe in the Senate?
I think so. It's been through a Senate inquiry, and most of the reaction, Michelle, was one of, this is great, can it go further? Can we maybe tweak it up even more? Can we muscle it up more? We're saying, let's get it in, let's learn from that experience, and then let's see whether it needs strengthening and further refinement. The horticulture code, you know, if you're at Mareeba in North Queensland thinking about selling your bananas to Brisbane, it's a mighty long way away, and making sure you're clear on the terms and conditions, what quality is required, how that'll be resolved, that's all about making sure efficient businesses, big and small, have a supportive environment for their enterprise. The Harper Review is a key report that's come to government, some 56 recommendations in there, and we've had three round tables and ongoing discussions with the states and territories about how we can make sure, again, the competition policy, law and institutional arrangements are supporting efficient businesses, big and small, with a chance to thrive and prosper, and that contest to delight customers is one on merit, not just on economic muscle, where the big guys push the little people around.
Can we just turn to a few general questions?
Yeah.
How damaging was the spectacular cabinet leak on the citizenship plan?
Well, the reporting of any cabinet discussion, whether it's accurate or inaccurate, is unhelpful. We need to focus all of our energies on bringing our best efforts to the very important role of contributing fully to the cabinet processes. Michelle, I've got to tell you, being a cabinet minister is an extraordinary honour, a great privilege, but a heavy responsibility as well. And in that package of what being a cabinet minister is all about is making sure you behave in a manner in keeping with that of a cabinet minister.
Did you find yourself on Monday, which was the subsequent cabinet meeting, looking around and feeling less trusting of those in the room and thinking, well, I wonder who that was?
No, I didn't actually. I did know that someone had let themselves down and let all of us down.
Well, you
don't always know the etymology of these things. You don't know whether it's a minister sharing observations with staff, and that we don't know. And I'm not even prepared to speculate. All I know is that's not our best effort, and that's not what's expected. And we need our best effort, best contribution, best insights, and that goes to a good cabinet that governs well. And that's all about what the public want.
What would happen to a leaker if they were found?
Well, if there's a leaker and they've let the side down like that, they don't deserve to be in cabinet. They've let themselves down.
Get them out?
Oh, I would.
Sack them?
Oh, I would. I'm not Prime Minister, but if I knew who it was, whether it was staffer or minister, I'd say you've failed to live up to the high standards and expectations of such an honoured and rare privilege. You've let yourself down, you've let the team down, and that's not what we expect.
We do know from the journalist who reported it that the leak was partly inspired on the part of the sources or source by a feeling that the cabinet processes have been poor. Have you, at least in regard to this issue, have you been satisfied that the cabinet process is adequate, that you get material ahead of time, that things are brought to cabinet when they should be brought, that there's plenty of opportunity to study
them? Michelle, I have no criticism of the cabinet processes, and to be honest with you, if I did, I wouldn't share them.
All right. Malcolm Turnbull today has issued some warnings in relation to the more radical proposal of scrapping citizenship from Australian-only citizens who've been engaged in terrorist activities, and that's if they're eligible for citizenship elsewhere. Have you got a view on this? He's obviously very cautious about it.
Yeah, my view is the Cabinet's view, and that is where there's
jewels. It doesn't have one yet.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's exactly my view, is that we've made a very clear statement about dual citizens who have behaved in such a way that damages our nation, that is a hostile act, that in earlier times would be called treason, but now that's a different world because non-state actors are involved. We've made it clear that if that's what you want to do, then you forfeit your right to hold your Australian citizenship and you can rely on the other one. On the issue you're referring to, Cabinet's quite rightfully said, let's put that out and have that conversation. That's exactly what the Cabinet position is, and it sounds like Malcolm's engaging in that conversation, and good on him. So that's my position, and I think that's a sensible way to go. I think the conversation's a very important one where we need to weigh a range of considerations. I know that provision exists in other jurisdictions, but then the way in which they exercise it is as much of an interest to me as the provision itself, and that's why we're having the consultation.
So do you think it's okay for ministers to be part of this conversation, or should they just wait till interest groups and community groups, ethnic groups, feedback material and then have the discussion in cabinet?
Well, as I understand it, Malcolm felt he needed some clarity about his view. It's my job to offer a commentary on my cabinet colleagues, and I won't. But that's my understanding about why Malcolm's engaged in that process, because there was some reporting of his view. I don't know whether that was accurate or not, but he felt he needed to, in light of that reporting, make his views clear. And that's up to him. And it's not my job to comment on whether that's good or otherwise. We've got a public conversation going on. Malcolm's a wise individual, and I imagine his insights will be of use and of utility to other people, and that's where I'm at with it.
Now, on another conversation that's going on gay marriage,
Some
backbenchers have been quite critical of frontbenchers saying things in public, either on the substantive issue or on the issue of whether there should be a conscience vote for Liberals. Are you comfortable with ministers speaking out? Is this a sort of special issue?
Well, I'm comfortable, and I'm also not a commentator. I mean, this is an important issue of very strong feelings of decent people on completely different sides of the argument and in terms of what outcome and ambition they may have for government policy and legislation. I respect those views. I hear them. I'm in an electorate where, because my margin is relatively modest, I'm viewed as the soft underbelly of the political process, and people don't hold back sharing their views with me. We've got a position that we took to the election. There's been no opportunity for colleagues to discuss whether there's a case to vary or to change tack on that. That's where it's at now.
Do you have views you can share with us?
Oh, I've shared my views, and that is, I think wherever people find love, that's a blessing. That is fantastic. And the opportunity to celebrate that love between family and friends and to have it formally recognised, of course that should happen. The issue here is how best to do that, and that's the conversation I've been engaging with.
So would you vote for gay marriage?
Oh, I think there's a little more need to find something that we can all agree to.
Something short of that.
Well, I think there may be a need to look at a more cohesive, more collaborative, something that recognises strong views all around. I've got some thoughts on that, but
civil
I'm not
going
to share those. Well, civil unions are largely in place in most state jurisdictions now.
What
and
is
commitment
there between
ceremonies
civil unions and commitment, marriage?
And commitment ceremonies are happening, and I've been asked about whether more weddings would occur and whether that would be good for the economy. I think there's an important conversation to have. Strong feelings on both sides, I don't think a good outcome is one group wins and another one loses. I think we can be more mature, but that conversation needs to be had in a very thoughtful way. I'm having that conversation
that
with my colleagues.
Doesn't sound like a yes vote for marriage equality, though.
I think there's more to it than the slogans. I think there's more to it than the campaign headlines. I think there's more to us understanding how strongly people feel on both sides of the argument and respecting that and seeing what we can do to give effect to people's ambitions, whatever their outcome may be.
What's your electorate saying to you?
Oh, it's perfectly split. I'm getting a lot of email traffic, some from my electorate, some not. And I'm getting a lot of phone calls, most of those from my electorate. And it's people of goodwill. Decent, honourable, decent, good people who are saying, I feel very strongly about this side of the argument, as well as others are saying, I feel very strongly about the other side of the argument.
Of course, there are organised campaigns in those.
Of course,
step
there are, and we're alert to that. And when the emails have a certain familiarity to them, it's hard not to think they're organised, and that's okay. I respect the fact that people of goodwill would like to have their message organised and amplified. I understand that. We just need to be thoughtful and respectful to the very strong feelings on both sides of this debate.
Would you like to see the issue resolved one way or the other by the year's end?
I'd like to see the issue resolved in a way that respects the strong views of very differing perspectives. That's what I'd like.
But on the timetable?
Well, if that's achievable within the window that you're outlining, that's great. If it's not, I'd just like to find a way forward that we can all embrace and feel is a good outcome, regardless of your perspective. I'd be disappointed to see one side of the argument feel that they've triumphed and the other side of the argument feel like they've been trounced and feel ill about that outcome. I don't think ill feeling should be the consequences of the resolution of this debate. Good feeling, respect, an opportunity to embrace and recognise a range of differing views, and above all, support people finding love and celebrating that and having it recognised before family and friends. And I think that's a worthwhile ambition wherever love is found.
Thank you very much for talking with us today. That was Bruce Bilson, Minister for Small Business. And that's all from the Conversations Politics podcast for today. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson. We look forward to bringing you another interview soon. I'm Michelle Grattan.
I was saved by God to make America great again.
An autocrat loves a crisis. A crisis is the way that they mobilize their base.
While America is under invasion from within, we're under invasion from within.
He's testing the boundaries of what he can get away with.
We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military.
We've asked six of the world's preeminent scholars how we can measure the make of an autocrat. It's a recipe of sorts, tried and tested by the most infamous leaders in history.
Hugo Chavez in Venezuela.
Vladimir Putin in Russia.
Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler.
Viktor Orban in Hungary.
He's basically bulletproof in terms of criminal prosecution.
Join us from December 29 as we explore Trump, the making of an autocrat, from The Conversation.